As the Pentagon works to reform its acquisition practices and policies, defense officials have found that requirements development might be a large part of why many programs have exceeded deadlines and budgets. So the Pentagon is recommending that its requirements writers get additional training in an effort to better manage and identify cost savings in the acquisition process. Joining us now with an analysis of the future of all this is Dr. Jack Gantzler, former Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, and currently with the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland. Dr. Gantzler, always great to have you on.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Now, this memo just came to light. It came from Frank Kendall, who is the Deputy DOD Acquisition Chief, is saying, just take the training courses we already offer. But it sounds like they've made progress this year. Tell us your take on requirements and how well they're being disciplined at the Pentagon.
Yeah, too many of the people think of the overall acquisition process, what we buy, goods and services, as simply writing a contract. And they actually don't think enough about what it is we ask for, and that's the requirements process. And too often you will end up getting gold plating and therefore driving costs and schedule crazy. And so it really matters what you ask for, not just how you go about buying it. And it's that requirements process that Frank Kendall's trying to address. And too often, the people who write those requirements are the combatant command people, the warfighters, if you will, and they haven't even been trained in terms of the acquisition process and don't know what they are asking for, its implications in terms of cost, schedule, and whether or not it's even feasible to do it. And so even if we were to perfectly buy the wrong thing, it doesn't do any good. We have to make sure we're actually asking for something that is not only feasible and desirable, but also affordable. So cost becomes an important part of the requirements process, and we have to educate the people who are asking for things to make sure that they understand what they ask for could end up costing so much that they can't get enough of them, and numbers do matter.
So it sounds as if, for example, just to make up an absurd example, say someone in the Air Force, a top general, could say, well, we need a fighter that can fly 10 times the speed of sound, cost $100,000 a piece, and put a 5-megaton bomb within a yard of the target or something ridiculous like that. So it would really be up to the acquisition shop to say, wait a minute, we got to get realistic here. So how do they actually make that happen? And would you also not have to bring in the contractors to some degree to say, is this even feasible?
That's a very important point that you raised, which is the dialogue that takes place between the government and industry in terms of what is feasible, what's affordable, can we get enough of them? It would be as though you and I were going to go out and buy a car and we put all the requirements for it and it came out to be a Maserati, but we couldn't afford it. And we would need to buy enough of them. In the case of your fighter plane example, one very good fighter plane isn't enough to win a war. You need to be able to afford numbers, and in many cases, numbers matter more even than individual weapon performance. So we have to educate the people who are asking for things as to whether or not they are feasible and affordable. And what I was surprised to find, I did a commission recently with the Secretary of the Army looking at the exposure that the warfighters get to the acquisition process, and it turned out almost zero. So that even in Iraq and Afghanistan today, where there are like 270,000 contractors, more than half of the force, total force over there, are contractors, and yet the warfighters have never been exposed to the contracting process, to the requirements process, and they need to be educated on how they ask for things. And that's what Frank Kendall's asking about, how they write the requirement. I mean, the ideal requirement, for example, might be one that the JDAM missile, the Chief of Staff of the Air Force said, I only have three requirements for that missile. One is it should hit the target, that's an accuracy requirement. Two, it should work, that's a reliability requirement. And three, it ought to cost under $40,000 each so that I can afford enough of them. And now it works, hits the target, and costs $17,000 each. And that's the way we should write requirements. But instead, too often, it turns out that we gold-plate them.
We're speaking with Dr. Jack Gantzler, former Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. Now, over on the civilian side, Dan Gordon at the Office of Federal Procurement Policy is formulating a way to reinvigorate pre- requirement discussions between government and industry and trying to take that back into the light. Do you sense a similar thing happening in the Pentagon? Can they accomplish that in a way that won't raise questions about improper communications?
Well, that's exactly the issue we were just talking about a few minutes ago, this industry-government dialogue. If people worry that you can't have that dialogue until you've made a selection, or it's too late. You have to be able to get the information in the same way you and I do market research. You know, we go out and we talk to different car dealers and we make best value judgments about what performance and cost. Well, the government has to be able to do that in the defense side as well as in the commercial side. And that open dialogue between industry and government, with the government asking lots of questions and industry giving lots of information, and then the government deciding what they want to exactly ask for that's affordable and feasible.
And so what should industry do to be able to foster this without getting pushy or looking like they're being improper?
Well, industry does its market work. In other words, it has to expose the government to what it's capable of doing. And the problem here is that there are many people who think that it's improper to have that dialogue, and yet it's very clear, in fact, even allowable under the Federal Acquisition Regulations, to have one-on-one discussions between government and different industries, rather than having to have everybody in the room at the same time, because under those conditions, nobody's willing to talk with their competitors and present. So you have to encourage this dialogue prior to the decision-making in order to find out what's feasible. It's the market research problem, and there's been a reluctance to have that dialogue, the industry-government dialogue, and I think that needs to open up.
And before we let you go, I just wanted to ask an unrelated question, and we've been waiting since November for the tanker contract award. Are you hearing any buzz about when that's likely to actually occur?
No. I keep hearing that it was the Air Force number one priority a number of years ago, and the old tankers were getting older. And we still continue on with this process, and there's an argument that even says that maybe both of them ought to win. And if you were FedEx or UPS, you'd say, well, we'll continue this competition going forever, but we'll make the selection on the basis of performance that we actually get and prices that we actually get. Use the market to operate that. But unfortunately, what we have been getting is a series of awards and protests, and it just keeps dragging on and on and on.
Do you ever get the sense, or did it ever happen under your watch, that you got the sense that the people in charge of that program had the answer but were just afraid to pull the trigger because of the politics that might ensue?
No, I think you don't really want to make your decision on the basis of politics or even on the basis of prejudgments. You want to make the judgment on the basis of actual results that the two get and the prices that the two offer and the realism of those prices, of course, because once you make a single decision, then historically that particular contract keeps growing. You have to be careful of that. But I don't think we should allow the politics of it. In this case, it's interesting in the sense that they're both going to be built in America, whether Alabama or, you know, someplace else. But it's not a foreign buying. It's a domestic labor question. And I think the Air Force needs those tankers, and we ought to go ahead with the program.